been listening lately to a church leadership podcast from Kerry Newhoff. He's a church leadership consultant. He's studied many different kinds of churches, especially growing churches that are focused on their mission and growing an impact, kind of like ours. I find his advice and insights almost always like right on and completely helpful and applicable. He sends these daily emails, and I almost always read them. Which, I mean, if any of you get daily emails from some list, how often do you, like, every day read them? That must mean they're pretty good. These emails and the podcast are the reason that lately I've been trying to do two things. Two things that do not come easily for me. Two things that are actually two of the hardest things for me. Two things I almost always fail at. But I keep trying because Kerry Newhoff told me they'll make me a more effective leader. And also, I keep trying because I don't actually need him to tell me. Because when I manage to do the two things, I know. I mean, I always know they make me better. They make all sorts of things better. So the two things, first, is to sleep more. And second, to turn my phone to do not disturb more often, even when I'm not sleeping. This is very challenging. Both of them. They are very hard for me, and I know that I'm not alone. I mean, maybe these are not your two particular challenges, but in today's world, it's likely that you have something like this, something that would signal for you a stepping away, a turning off, literally or metaphorically. Something that would mean an intentional idleness, or even what Unitarian Universalist minister Tom Owen Toll calls being lazy by choice. Lazy is not usually a prized quality for Unitarian Universalists. Definitely not one that's rewarded by our dominant culture either. Quite the opposite. We're often proud of just how busy we are. How full our schedules are. As Tim Kreider describes it in his New York Times article, he calls it the busy trap. He says, busyness today often serves as a kind of existential reassurance, a hedge against emptiness. Obviously, your life cannot possibly be silly or trivial or meaningless if you are completely booked and in demand every hour of the day. I don't like to admit it, but if I am not paying close attention, not checking in actively with my own schedule, not practicing those two things, not tending to what I'm actually saying yes to, or what my family is saying yes to, I know I can fall into that trap. Because I want to feel like how I spend my days and what I offer in my life makes a difference in the world. That it does reduce suffering. Men's brokenness contributes to joy, and there is so much suffering. So much brokenness, so much need for joy. So trying to make a dent in it at all, it seems obvious that it must require constant effort. And that constant effort can be in and of itself reassuring, regardless of its actual impact. In his poem, Bodhisattva Vows, poet Albert Saijo gets to this problem in this cycle. He writes, "You're spending all your time and energy getting other people off the sinking ship into lifeboats bound gaily for nirvana. Well, there you are, sinking. And of course you had to go and give your life jacket away. So now let us be cheerful as we sink. our spirits ever buoyant as we sink. Often in our care for others, we fail to care for our own heart, our own spirit, and we make a choice, consciously or subconsciously, to give away our own life jacket, often by way of non-stop efforting, because we want to feel like we are making a dent. But if we want to keep helping others swim, we need to be able to swim ourselves. No one, it turns out, is helped by our drowning. Which is why the second half of the phrase, love your neighbor as yourself, says you need to love yourself. This is why Buddhist activist Mushin Patricia Ikeda asked all of her students, before they commit their lives to compassion or activism, to first begin with a vow not to burn out. Literally, she makes them take a vow. It goes like this. Aware of suffering and injustice, I, Gretchen, am working to create a more just, peaceful, and sustainable world. We know that part. Keeps going. I promise, for the benefit of all, to practice self-care, mindfulness, healing, and joy. I vow not to burn out. I've been checking in with my friends and fellow leaders, local and then further away, people I describe as people who are on the front lines of some of the most difficult issues facing us today, those who are dealing directly with the human cost of our inhumane immigration policies, our untenable economic structures, our insufficient health care, especially our mental health care. These are social workers and community organizers, counselors, teachers, ministers, parents, grandparents, activists of all sorts. That is, all of us who are tending to the world's and also our families' brokenness on a regular basis. And what I find when I check in, most of all, is weariness, exhaustion, anxiety, all made worse because often those folks I just named, their salaries to help them in their life, their own life, are minuscule. In each conversation, I keep thinking, we're not going to make it. I mean, we're not going to last. And we need these people, those of us who tend to the world's brokenness, those who are handing out the life jackets, we need them to last. We should all be taking vows. I promise, for the benefit of all, not to burn out. Ikeda says it's good to remember that Martin Luther King and his fellow organizers, they often planned their protests to occur at about 11 in the morning because then the people who were arrested would get lunch in jail and they wouldn't have to wait so many hours to eat. She says every movement we need to remember is made up of real people with real needs. And even in the most noble of endeavors, it's okay to take those needs into consideration. It's not just okay, it is required for the benefit of all. To do great things, we cannot just do the great things, we have to do the small things. This grand vision of the moral arc of the universe bending towards justice, it is bent in the most mundane moments by tending to the lunch hour, turning off the phone, getting enough sleep. This is the sort of paradox at the heart of the Tao, which is the scriptural source for the piece that Spencer read. It's a Chinese text dating back to about the 6th century before the Common Era, which coincidentally, I find it interesting, is about the same time that much of the Hebrew Bible was written as we receive it today. A lot was going on in the 6th century before the Common Era. But the goal of the Tao is to describe the way or the essential process of the universe. It's one of my favorite texts because it is deeply challenging to the values of our dominant culture today, as one of its main instructions is the not doing. And also that paradox, to do much, do little. To have much, let go of everything. Sometimes, occasionally, as I said, I do manage to follow its advice and trust in the idea that there is wisdom in turning it all off, in being away and being apart. And when I do, I know, I understand how when you are fully disconnected, when we are fully disconnected, right then we feel ourselves even more connected. Connected in a deeper way to everything, to ourselves, that is what it would say is the way. It's what so many great spiritual teachers were after when they're trying to run away from their followers. If you notice, in many of the world's religions, often teachers are spending a lot of their times trying to get away from the people they're supposed to be leading. But that is not actually about escape. When Moses goes to the mountaintop or Jesus spend weeks in the wilderness, it is actually the opposite. It is a practice of being even more connected to everything and everyone. So that when we are lazy by choice, we can think of it as simply being good partners with the whole of life, doing our part to participate in that big, great whole. It helps, because I forget this all the time, I have started a practice intentionally and explicitly whenever I try, I know it's funny, whenever I try to not do, whenever I work at not doing, I know the irony. But at the beginning of any of these practices of not doing, I've started to say to myself three things. I say hello to the universe intentionally, like, hello, Earth. Like, I imagine myself in the company of everything. Like, I'm in a living room with the company of the stars, the trees, the breeze. And then I pay attention to my company, including what's coming up in me, the feelings, maybe the words, to notice my breathing and my body like we did earlier, just as information, trying to release the judgment, what it should look like, what it must look like, just to be in good company, like we're hanging out. I've adapted this practice from a few different sources. Maybe it's helpful to you. Feel free to borrow it. I'm sure we all have our own ways of being able to show up and not do. Now, in case like me, it's not something that actively comes naturally. I have just a couple of pointers. You can't unplug and drive. You also cannot unplug and talk to your mom. You can't unplug and write a sermon. And you definitely cannot unplug and scroll Facebook. Or even in a more general way, keep up with the news. That is part of the challenge, right? That part of this practice is giving in that you might miss something. There may be a point when you don't know something that someone else knows. This is part of the point. to let the world go on, and to trust, to find that deeper rhythm, the bigger one. On the other hand, it is possible that you might be able to unplug and do laundry. Some people I've heard are able to do that, or cook dinner. I cannot, either of those. I can walk my dog and unplug. Maybe you can try that. But the key is to, in this not doing, only do the things that feel like not doing, which again, just pro tip, is best accomplished by literally not doing. You may have noticed and wondered the whole thing I haven't said, this whole service, is the word Sabbath, which is, get this, a whole day of idleness and inefficiency every week. This used to be a thing, I'm told, not that long ago, an ancient practice that was supported and encouraged by our culture. Now it seems to me pretty countercultural, even radical, to resist the need to be constantly on alert, ready to respond to whatever may be coming our way, what new tweet might be coming out, what new news cycle, to resist the response and the impossibly short cultural memory engendered by that cycle, to simply refuse to be a part of that fake cycle, and instead step back into the deeper, real, and let in the whole. Theologian Rebecca Parker calls Sabbath the most radical act we could engage in today, a radical act of hope and resistance. So depending on how radical you're feeling, how much you are committed to being a force of resistance, I invite you to lead the way. I obviously need your help. We need you, you who are more practiced and even somewhat proficient at this regular practice of stopping, sitting still, sleeping, skilled at all of this, not as a way of escape, but rather to connect more deeply and fully with everything and everyone. Now, if a day is too much, I'd invite you to start just in the smallest moments every day, to find a few moments where you put your phone on do not disturb and walk away, whatever away means for you, and say, hello, Earth. Hello, trees. And just breathe. Instead of doing, just being for a few moments every day. As poet Wendell Berry reminds us, harvest will fill the barn. For that, the hand must ache, the face must sweat, and yet no leaf or grain is filled by work of ours. The field is tilled and then left to grace. Great work is done while we're asleep. And so we take up our vow for the benefit of all. I promise not to burn out, to keep sleeping, to keep practicing together. Amen.